A sound out of time fills the cave. Not the sloughing and sighing of waves, for the sea fled as the cold bit and the mountains grimaced against icy armour. Now rough walls surround a soft, ebbing breath, chasing a slowing pulse. At the end of the world, literally and figuratively, the last Neanderthal in Iberia witnesses a low, glinting sun across the distant Mediterranean. As a flint dark sky lightens to grey dawn, soft coos of rock doves clash with the keening of lost gulls, crying like hungry children. But there are no more babies, no more of the people left, no one at all to join in watching the stars disappear, to hold vigil until the last breath leaves the air to cool. Some 40,000 years later, oceans have risen again. Salt tinges the air, and the walls of the same cave are ringing to voices and music, a requiem for a dream of the ancestors. This is Gorham's Cave, Gibraltar, 2014. Archaeologists and anthropologists gather annually on this balmy southern tip of Europe for one among many conferences on Neanderthals. But that year, something special happened. Among delegates visiting the great cathedral-like caves was musician Kid Comer, aka biologist Professor Doug Larson. He began to work the strings of a guitar, singing of the last man standing. Some of the youngest known Neanderthal archaeology comes from the Iberian Peninsula and these caves. For a few minutes, as his voice reverberated in the great stony chamber, professional concerns of presentations, hotly debated theories, or intricacies of stone tool classifications were muted. Colleagues simply listened, and the human urge to connect with the ancient past took over. You can experience this strange, oddly moving moment because someone thought to film it, and it's now on YouTube. That serenade to the graveyards of millennia throws a candid chink of light onto the people behind the science. Once the meticulous, objective scientific presentations are over, it's at the cafes and bars where less constrained, even passionate speculation emerges between colleagues who are also friends. Conversations range between dream sites to knowns versus unknowns. All dance around the question of whether we'll ever manage to glimpse the subtle reality of who Neanderthals were. This book is a window onto those discussions. It's for those who've heard of the Neanderthals or not, for the vaguely interested to the amateur expert, even for the scientists lucky enough to research their ancient world. Because that's an increasingly immense task, convoluted paths through data and theory are crisscrossed by new discoveries, forcing diversions and even U-turns. The sheer amount of information is hard to process. Few specialists have time to read every fresh article in their own subfield, never mind the total scholarly output concerning Neanderthals. Even the most seasoned researchers can be left open-mouthed by new discoveries. And this abundance of attention and analysis is because Neanderthals matter, have always mattered. They possess pop cultural cachet like no other extinct human species. Among our ancient relatives, known as hominins, Neanderthals are truly A-list. Big finds grab covers of major science journals and headlines in mainstream media. Our fascination shows no signs of lessening. Google Trends shows that searches for Neanderthal have even overtaken those for human evolution. This degree of celebrity is, however, a double-edged sword. Editors know Neanderthals are potent clickbait and will tempt readers with sexed-up coverage, often angled towards some flavour of X killed the Neanderthals, or Neanderthals not so dumb as we think. Researchers' enthusiasm for sharing their work is tempered by frustration with consistent and contradictory spin, often framing them as boffins stumbling from one idea to another. Science manifestly operates by contention. However, new data and theories don't reflect the bafflement of researchers, but their enormous dynamism. Moreover, persistently clichéd Neander news means the average person never hears about some of the most fascinating modern findings. The bigger picture, too, is hard to grasp, having transformed drastically since 1856, when odd fossils from a German quarry were tentatively seen as a vanished species of human. Scholars began digging for more of these strange beings, and by the First World War, growing numbers of Neanderthal bones made it clear Earth had birthed many siblings alongside us. Attention expanded to stone tools found in multitudes, and the first serious investigation of Neanderthal culture began. Time itself was key. By the mid-20th century, sites that had previously floated in time and were widely separated in space were connected through progress in dating techniques and geological chronologies. Fast forward 7 more decades, and it's upon these foundations that today we survey the grand prospect of the Neanderthal world, spanning thousands of kilometres and well over 350,000 years. Yet 21st century archaeology is worlds away from its beginnings and might more closely resemble a Victorian futurist's fantasies. Early prehistorians had little more than stones and bones with which to reconstruct the ancient past, whereas today's researchers work in ways their forebears didn't know existed. Laser scans, instead of ink sketches, take the likeness of an entire site, as specialists study objects no one a century ago dreamed of finding. From fish scales and feather barbs to the microhistories of individual hearths, our insights are as likely to emerge under the lens of a microscope as at the edge of a trowel. We can almost spy over Neanderthal shoulders, reconstructing the few minutes taken for a cobble to be efficiently reduced to sharp flakes 45,000 years ago. The static archaeological record itself becomes dynamic. We watch as tools move around sites and are taken away into the landscape. We can even trace them in reverse to the original outcrops. And incredibly intimate insights into Neanderthal bodies are now possible. Just considering teeth, we can scrutinise daily growth lines, assess diet from micro polishes, and even chemically smell hearth smoke that infiltrated their dental calculus. Out of this abundance of information has come a renaissance in Neanderthal research over the last 3 decades. A parade of astonishing findings have hit the headlines, and our basic understanding of where and when they lived, how they used tools, what they ate, and the symbolic dimensions of their world has been revolutionised. Perhaps most astonishingly, once rubbished stories of interspecies love are teased out from nondescript morsels of bone, and a teaspoon of cave dirt can produce entire genomes. Whizzy machines allow us to extract terabytes of information from every conceivable substance. But all this is tempered by archaeologists' realisation that how sites form is crucial to understanding what they contain. Over millennia, vagaries of preservation, erosion and time mean everything comes to us as fragments. Recording the positions of artefacts is vital to understanding the integrity of each layer, before we get carried away with analysis. Broken and long separated parts can be reunited, while soil structure, the lilted angle of flint flakes or weathering on bone splinters, all contribute to deciphering site formation. It's from this tattered and sometimes jumbled archive that we must glean history. So archaeologists still feel excitement while excavating, but the average dig produces tens or hundreds of thousands of carefully collected objects that must be washed, labelled, and nestled in individual sealed bags. Coexisting digitally within massive provenance databases, they're a priceless resource, allowing us to explore the intersections between geology, the environment, and hominin action. Such caution has also altered how we deal with museum collections accumulated long ago. Increasingly, classic sites, some visited by thousands of tourists each year, are revealing new and sometimes unexpected secrets through state-of-the-art reanalysis. It's the sum of all this that allows us to answer more accurately than ever before fundamental questions such as, what did Neanderthals eat? Nonetheless, even a brief foray into the science of Neanderthal diet shows how deceptively simple such a query is. Not only due to the range of materials and methods available, examining proportions of animal bones, microscopic wear on teeth and stone tools, preserved food residues or chemical and genetic analysis of fossils, but because healthy suspicions about how sites form extends to forensically investigating diet. Even in places stuffed with animal remains covered in slice marks from stone tools, things aren't always clear-cut. For example, archaeologists have learned the hard way to take into account the role of other predators and that body parts decay at different rates. But each advance adds to the overall picture. It turns out that much more than just big beasts were on the menu, yet did all Neanderthals eat the same foods, in all times and places? Everything in Neanderthals' lives was interconnected, and entanglements with other big questions abound. How much food did their bodies need? Did they cook? How did they hunt? How big were their territories? What were their social networks like? Each question unfolds another layer of complexity. Sorting patterns from the multitudes of artifacts and sites means looking up and out, bridging between places and times. Neanderthal life was four-dimensional, so as we reconstruct in phenomenal detail how they were hunting reindeer in one place, we must ask, what were they doing elsewhere and elsewhen? Many sorts of sites exist, from ephemeral scatters of stones haloing a carcass to masses of bones bedded in colossal ashy deposits, the ruined pyres of hundreds of beasts. Considering such different kinds of records brings us hard up against the capricious temporal cadence of the past, depending on how layers form two equal depths of sediment might contain an afternoon or 10 millennia. Dating individual objects is a powerful tool, but only if we're confident they've not moved between layers. And the information gleaned from individual artifacts, layers, or sites expands outwards, connecting different scales of behaviour. Such subtleties rarely feature in public discussion about and understanding of Neanderthals. Most people have rough ideas about them, but less so the scientific details. Moreover, they're largely set against a backdrop of ice and mammoths. Yet a whole other Neander world existed, beyond persistent stereotypes of shivering, ragged figures in frozen wastes, barely hanging on until the arrival of Homo sapiens, before dropping dead. Despite greater access than ever before to research as it happens, via social media savvy researchers or live-streamed conferences, the tsunami of new data and complicated interpretation means balanced and truly up-to-date perspectives are hard to find. Genuine wow finds do catch the attention of 24-hour news cycles and even researchers by surprise. But the bling stories aren't always the most fascinating. Carefully argued theories and debates lasting decades make for poor headlines. But such stories contain some of the most surprising ideas about Neanderthal lives. In fact, nuance underlies many of the most significant reorientations in understanding. Perspectives broaden in step with accruing data, and the gap between us and them continually diminishes. Many things we thought beyond Neanderthal's ken are today widely accepted by a slow aggregation of data. Tools made of materials other than stone, use of mineral pigments, collecting objects like shells and eagle talons, and, by extension, engaging with aesthetics. Furthermore, diversity has emerged. Neanderthals today are less like identikit hominins than denizens of a world as wide and rich as the Roman Empire. Its huge scope in space and time means cultural variety, complexity, and evolution. Varied and adaptable, Neanderthals survived in vanished worlds where kilometre-high glaciers met tundra, but also in warm forests, deserts, coasts, and mountains. Over 160 years since their rediscovery, our obsession with Neanderthals persists. This is a love affair, longer than a lifetime, but compared to the vast span of time they walked the earth, squinting against sunrises, sucking lungfuls of air, leaving footprints behind in mud, sand, and snow, it's barely a shiver of the second hand on time's great clock. How we think and feel about them is constantly evolving, from the average person Googling, "Are Neanderthals human?" to those who work on their remains every day. Neanderthals are reimagined before our eyes, each discovery stoking anew our desires and fears about who these ancient people really were. Strangest of all is the afterlife they could never have conceived, entangled through nearly two centuries of science, history, and popular culture, their story now extends into our far future. The rest of this audiobook will paint a 21st century portrait of the Neanderthals. Not dullard losers on a withered branch of the family tree, but enormously adaptable and even successful ancient relatives. You're listening to this book because you care about them and the greatest, grandest questions they pose. Who we are, where we come from, and where we might be going. Look through shadows, listen beyond echoes. They have much to tell. Not only of other ways to be human, but new eyes to see ourselves. The most glorious thing about the Neanderthals is that they belong to all of us, and they're no dead-end, past-tense phenomenon. They are right here, in my hands typing, and your brain understanding my words. Read on, and meet your kindred.